watching TV and that person's soul come to you and say, hey, what happened to the person that killed me? And you turn around and you tell them, well, we executed them. And then the person asks you, the victim asks you, so that means you sent them off to a better place? I mean, if you actually think about it, you know, and even those that committed those horrendous crimes, I think they need to be evaluated so we can understand why they committed this, what made them trigger, so we can understand to put a resolution to preventing these type of things from happening. But just X'ing them out and killing them is not the answer.
Sister Simone Campbell, finally, Trump executed more prisoners than the last 10 presidents combined when he was president. Now he promises to expand the death penalty. How is the network lobby for Catholic social justice and other groups responding and mobilizing for his second term?
Well, as on so many issues that need to be addressed in this second term, the mobilization is quite strong. I think it's buoyed up by President Biden's choice for life in this situation. And the fact is, there will be demonstrations. But I think what your listeners need to understand is that those 13 executions were done in the last 6 months of his presidency. And as was said, it was done as a political stunt, not as an element of the justice system. So the whole movement will continue to push at the state level and to ensure that federal law changes so we do not get in this situation again. We have to change federal law, state law, and commute the sentences at the state level. We have a lot of work to do.
Sister Simone Campbell, former head of the Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice, and Herman Lindsay, executive director of Witness to Innocence, which advocates to end the death penalty. He was convicted in 2006 on Florida death row for 3 years before being exonerated by the Florida Supreme Court in 2009. Next up, we look at the damning House Ethics Report on former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, Trump's first pick for Attorney General. Stay with us.
My father could use a little mercy now. The fruits of his labor falling right slowly on the ground. Work is almost over. It won't be long. He won't be around. I love my father. He could use some mercy now.
Now by Mary Gauthier. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the damning details of the House Ethics Committee report released Monday on former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, Trump's first pick for attorney general, before Gaetz was forced to withdraw from consideration. He tried to block the report's release this week, but failed. The bipartisan committee's report found Gaetz, quote, regularly paid women for engaging in sexual activity with him, possessed illegal drugs, including cocaine and ecstasy, on, quote, multiple different occasions. The report also found Gaetz had paid a 17-year-old high school student for sex in 2017. The Ethics Committee also investigated a trip Gaetz made in 2018 to the Bahamas, where he accepted transportation and lodging in violation of the House rules and laws on gifts. The committee found Gaetz, quote, violated House rules, state and federal laws, and other standards of conduct prohibiting prostitution, statutory rape, illicit drug use, acceptance of impermissible gifts, the provision of special favors and privileges, and obstruction of Congress. The report has renewed questions about how Gates escaped federal charges after an earlier Justice Department criminal investigation. A lawyer for two women who testified before the House Ethics Panel, which is evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, two of the witnesses said they were paid for sexual favors by Gates, including one who said she witnessed Gates having sex with a minor, had called for the report to be released. Joel Leppard said in a statement, the House Ethics Committee's thorough investigation and detailed findings vindicate my clients' accounts and demonstrate their credibility. Meanwhile, Gates continued to deny all allegations against him. He wrote on X, quote, giving funds to someone you're dating that they didn't ask for and that isn't charged for sex is now prostitution. There's a reason they did this to me in a Christmas Eve report and not in a courtroom of any kind where I could present evidence and challenge witnesses, he said. Gates also spoke Sunday about his future in politics at Turning Points America Fest.
My fellow Floridians have asked me to eye the governor's mansion in Tallahassee. Maybe special counsel to go after the insider trading from my former colleagues in Congress. It seems I may not have had enough support in the United States Senate. Maybe I'll just run for Marco Rubio's vacant seat in the United States Senate and join some of those folks.
Gates has also said he may return to Congress briefly since the special election to replace him is set for April 1st. He wrote on X he could be sworn in with the new House members in January, then file a privilege motion to, quote, expose every Me Too settlement paid using public funds of former and current members. He suggested he would then resign and head to the One America Network, where he's been hired to host his own hour-long political talk show. For more, we're joined in Miami, Florida by Naomi Feinstein, staff writer at Miami New Times. She's been reporting on Matt Gaetz. Her latest co-authored piece is headlined Former U.S. Rep. Matt Gaetz Paid 17-Year-Old for Sex, Ethics Report Found. Naomi, thanks so much for joining us. So the report found, among other things, he paid tens of thousands of dollars to women for sex. Explain exactly, as you analyze this report, what he is being accused of.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, the report is detailed. There are extensive records showing these payments from Venmo, from PayPal, from his checking account. And he had this middleman, Joel Greenberg, as we all know. He was the former tax collector of Seminole County. And he would help him arrange to meet these women via Seeking Arrangement, which is a mutual beneficial relationship website. More so, you know, colloquially, sugar babies wanting to meet sugar daddies. And so they would have these meetings, and it was pretty clear that these were for sex. And so you see in these text messages talking about payments, talking about flying to New York, flying here, flying to the Bahamas. And it's pretty clear. And the women also said they knew that, not all of them, of course, but some knew that this notion of sex and payment was expected in these relationships.
So wait, explain. So both of them were public officials.
Yeah, he was a Seminole County tax collector, ways away from us in Miami. So we don't know the ins and outs of him, you know, in terms of aside from, you know, his whole criminal indictment. He's actually currently in prison. But yeah, he was kind of like this little middleman for Matt, and he would really arrange these meets. There's text messages where he's texting with one woman asking, oh, do you have a friend? And she's like, yeah, I have a friend. And the meet would be $400. And he then sends a text, well, this is my friend, texting a picture of Matt. So you kind of see this. And he cooperated with investigators in terms of the federal investigation, but also with the House committee. He was pretty integral in giving a lot of these records, explaining how they would have these parties. Again, in July 2017, one of these parties is where Matt had sex with the 17-year-old girl. So, yeah, they kind of had this kind of tandem, this little tag team of having these parties, having this arrangement to meet women.
In one text exchange, a woman complains to another woman who's also involved that she didn't receive payment from from Gates. She said, I hate the money situation and drugs, she writes. The woman advises her to ask for her money up front and, quote, before you have sex with him, for sure. Talk about these text exchanges and talk about the significance of the House Ethics Committee releasing this report, because it meant that Republicans had to join the Democrats in agreeing to release it.
Yeah. These text messages, as you just read, are pretty explicit in terms of the details. They're talking about, again, all the drugs. He's asking for, oh, I'll pay you. Do you have cartridges for marijuana, like for marijuana pens? There's constant discussions of payment. One woman was complaining about not being paid, and he says, you only gave me a drive-by. And so there's a lot of this discussion about payment and not getting paid, again, in terms of these sexual favors. On the other front, yeah, I mean, it is shocking, I think, that they released it, given, you know, this split party line in terms of staying and also in tow with Trump, him being, you know, Gates being a Trump, fierce Trump ally. I just think the public pressure, I think, became too much. I don't know, I'm not in these meetings, but I just think it's hard to escape this. And I think there would be growing calls to release it. So I think it is shocking. But again, I think you saw the public pressure kind of almost forced him to pull out of the AG race. So I think the public pressure, again, just really forced their hand.
The report also focuses in part on a trip that Gates took to the Bahamas. Explain what this trip was.
Yeah, no, it's a very, we did, in our six takeaways in our article, we kind of pulled this trip out. So it was in 2018, it was Gates and two, they said, like friends, both of which are very tied in with the medical marijuana industry. Again, we don't know who they are. And they went with six women to the Bahamas. Gates flew commercial to the Bahamas, but his lodging was paid for by this medical marijuana individual, you know, tied into the industry. There was ecstasy. These women said they had sex with Gates. Their sexual activity, but not the extent of it. And in terms of, they said they weren't exactly paid for this. They said the trip itself was payment. The reason why this trip kind of, you know, got in the crosshairs, aside from his behavior, was that also on the way back from the trip, Gates went on a private plane, paid by this medical marijuana tied individual. So they found out that he had all these undisclosed gifts. The lodging was paid for, the meals were paid for. The woman said they never saw Gates pay for anything. And again, Gates flew on this private plane back. So again, these are just gifts that he's getting on the other front of besides his behavior.
So if you can talk about his role in the downfall of Kevin McCarthy, or I should say, the House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, attributes his downfall to Matt Gaetz, who, he said, wanted the Ethics Committee probe to be stopped because McCarthy didn't. He voted against him.
Yeah, I mean, he was leading the charge with getting Speaker McCarthy, you know, out. And so, yeah, and I mean, we even see at the RNC, I remember, before Matt took the stage, he's there like teasing McCarthy. And yeah, Gates is a fierce ally of Trump. So anyone getting in their way is their enemy, and so to speak. So yeah, he will do we'll see. I mean, it's pretty clear that he would really do anything to let that, you know, more right-wing MAGA agenda in. And so McCarthy was just in his way. And so he will do what he needs to do to help Trump.
And the possibility, now he's going on to OAN, the extreme right-wing TV network, but the possibility he could run for governor of Florida or Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's teasing it. Again, we don't know with him. He's very unpredictable. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he runs for governor. You know, he's been in state politics, his dad, you know, and so
What about the power of his family, Naomi Feinstein?
Yeah, they've just been ingrained in Florida politics. He's just known around here. And so I don't think he's going away so quickly. And so, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he runs for governor. Again, I don't know. Again, I'm all the way down in South Florida. We're miles away from what on the ground people think of Matt Gaetz, you know, in his congressional district. So he might be electable up there. We just don't know. And it's a gauge that we will find out, but it will be very interesting, I think, how this all plays out given these accusations. But at the same time, you see already everyone on his side, Trump, you know, defending him, saying these are baseless accusations. He was exonerated by the federal investigators. So it's going to be a situation like that, likely, I'm guessing.
And how it's possible that President-elect Trump, I mean, so many of his picks are from New York and from Florida, where he now resides. And, of course, Don Gaetz, Matt Gaetz's father, longtime Florida Republican politician. Trump, the president-elect, didn't know about this House report or the thought that it could even be possibly leaked.
I know. Yeah, I thought the same thing because
this he picked him for attorney general. This is a man, yeah. By the way, we should be very clear on his positions, far right positions, except on the issue of marijuana for decriminalization. Is that right? But on issues, yes. On issues of reproductive rights, fiercely anti-abortion. Talked about the women who support access to abortion, too unattractive to be impregnated, that those who attend abortion rallies are, quote, ugly on the inside and out when it comes to transgender issues, when it comes to the whole debate over bathrooms. He has been fierce in his anti-trans rhetoric, also even on the issue of contraceptives.
Yeah, exactly. And so back to what you were saying about the House report. I thought the same thing. I mean, again, we would hope that Trump knew about this, but at the same time, nothing surprises me at this point, you know? And so, yeah, I think it's shocking that he did go through if he didn't exactly know this, but at the same time, if he didn't know this, that's even crazier considering there should be proper vetting, you know what I mean? There should be proper discussions about this, but it's shocking that if he knew all of this and still proceeded.
Well, Naomi Feinstein, I want to thank you for being with us, staff writer at the Miami New Times. We'll link to your article, former U.S. Rep. Matt Gaetz paid 17-year-old for sex, ethics report found. Next up, we look at the toppling of the Assad regime, what it means for the Kurds of Syria. Stay with us. Everything by Indigo Spark. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with Syria and what the fall of the Assad regime means for Syria's 2 million Kurdish people, who make up about 10% of the country. Since the Islamist armed group, HDS, toppled the Assad regime, Turkey, Israel, and the United States are vying for greater control in post-Assad Syria, and the balance of power seems to be shifting against Kurdish groups. Turkey's foreign minister traveled to Damascus Sunday to meet with Syria's new de facto leader, Ahmed Ashara, the head of HDS. According to press accounts, they discussed the need for Syria to draft a new constitution, Israel's attacks on Syria, and the future of the Kurds. Meanwhile, a U.S. delegation met with Ashara on Friday, and the Biden administration's moving to lift a $10 million bounty on him over his links to al-Qaeda. The Pentagon also acknowledged there are now about 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, more than double previously announced figure of 900. On Monday, the Turkish president, Tayyip Erdogan, Syrian Kurdish armed groups had no place in Syria's future, adding that Turkey would continue targeted operations against it. Turkey regards the Syrian Kurdish militia, YPG, as an extension of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, which has fought an insurgency against the Turkish state for 40 years. The Syrian Kurdish YPG is the military wing of the Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, a key U.S. ally in fighting the Islamic State. But the return of President-elect Trump has called into question how long Washington's support will continue. For more, we're joined here in New York by Aslam Ghaneh. She's associate professor at the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at the College of Staten Island at the Department of Middle Eastern Studies at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, CUNY. She's also a steering committee member of the Emergency Committee for Rojava and is from the Bakut region of broader Kurdistan. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor. Thank you. About your concerns right now. What exactly is happening to the Kurdish population of Syria?
Thank you so much for having me. So this is a big threat for the Kurdish populations in Syria, and this is also a big threat for this Democratic Confederalist women's liberationary and pluralist experience that Kurds initiated in the region of North and East Syria more broadly. Because Turkey, as you've shown in the clip, and also as President Erdogan, for example, just this past week, said that we can't confine the great Turkish nation to its 700-something thousand kilometers. So Turkey is very explicitly saying that they're involved. Turkey has said very explicitly that they've been supporting HDS for 11 years and that they have a stake in Syria and have explicitly been intervening in the region, pushing for its interests, trying to further its already occupied. For example, Turkey has been occupying Afrin region of North and East Syria that was under the Kurdish self-government for now since 2018. So Turkey is a big threat to the democracy and against Kurds, especially at this moment. And we've seen in Syria, you know, both Israel and Turkey are making their progress at trying to control further territory, trying to exert further power and control in the region. And all through the U.S., U.S. has been, Turkey is a NATO country. We have to know this because sometimes this is represented in as if there's like Turkey versus the U.S., whereas actually Turkey is one of the major allies of the United States in the region. Turkey is the second largest NATO army. And Turkey has been not only massacring, torturing, imprisoning Kurds under the Turkish territories, under the Turkish nation state, but has been killing journalists in Kurdistan, has been killing journalists in Syria, in Iraq. So Turkey is really playing at becoming a major force in this region and taking Kurds out of the picture here.
Let's talk specifically about the journalists. Press mm-hmm. freedom groups have condemned the killing of two Kurdish journalists, Nazim Dastan and Cihan Bilgin, by a Turkish drone as they were reporting on attacks on the Tishrin Dam on the outskirts of Kobani in northern Syria. Right. Explain the significance right. of this right. area and who those journalists were. Right.
So those journalists, this is very, very important. This is crucial that Turkey target killed these two journalists in North and East Syria.
A man and a woman.
Yes. So Nazım Dastan has been showing Turkey's involvement with ISIS starting in 2014 when Kobani, this town that's now under the threat of yet another Turkish invasion, and the SNA, the Turkish militias, Turkish mercenaries paid by Turkey, are at the border and have started also ground invasion. Turkey is using airstrikes and drones to also do these targeted killings. Nazım Dastan was the journalist in 2014 who showed the Turkish ISIS alliance and how the ways, the different ways that Turkey was supporting ISIS in the region. And he was actually imprisoned in Turkey prior to his killing in north and east Syria. And Cihan Bilgin has also been doing very important work showing, for example, the lives of Kurdish people who were displaced from Afrin by Turkey's ethnic cleansing in 2018. So she has been in the region reporting the lives of these displaced people and also the ongoing Turkish attacks, because we need to understand something that's very important, is that Turkey, from 2014, by supporting ISIS into the killing of 14,000 Kurdish people at the hands of ISIS, backed by Turkey, was very important. Since then, in 2018, Turkey occupied Afrin, a region in northern East Syria that was under the Kurdish self-rule, and ethnically cleansed thousands of people, sold Kurdish women to slavery. And there are many, many human rights reports that show this at this moment. So 2018. 2019, Turkey again came to the UN meeting, and in front of all the UN, the world leaders, showed a detailed map as to how Turkey plans to colonize and occupy the north and east Syria. So it's trying to attack Kurds. In 2023, right before Israel's genocide started in Gaza, Turkey destroyed 40 to 50% of infrastructure in north and east Syria. And these, you know, they hardly make it to the media, but these are the realities, that Turkey is a major threat to Kurds and to democratic experiment that Kurds have been implementing in the region starting in 2014.
So let's talk about how this will all play out with the presidential transition here. Right. The U.S. is backing one Syrian Kurdish group that Turkey is opposed to, but at the same time, Turkey and the U.S. are allies, right?
Yes.
Both in NATO.
Yes.
And also, how worried are Kurds in Syria about President Trump returning to power? In 2019, he greenlit a Turkish invasion into northern Syria.
Right, right. I mean, as you know, these are fascist governments that are basically in coordination since the Cold War. Turkey has been one of major allies of the United States in the region, starting with the Cold War. I mean, using military training, sales of war equipment, the planes, the F-16s that kill Kurds in north and east Syria are sold by the U.S., and not only are sold by the U.S., but the U.S. actually gives a lot of military funding, humanitarian funding that are used in the purchase of these weaponry. So behind, you know, if you scratch the surface a little bit, the only purpose of those U.S. troops in the region were to prevent the further growth of ISIS. Because even prior to the U.S. entering the region, it was the Kurdish forces who have been, because of their own movement success of 40 years of practicing of self-governing, self-defense, women's self-defense forces. So these were all in place before the U.S. entered the region. But the current presence of the U.S. troops is to prevent Turkey from entering, annihilating, crushing, killing Kurds in tens of thousands. What we're seeing in Gaza today can happen in Rojava if we don't enter. And it happened previously to Kurdish populations in my hometown of Dersim, 1938, in Iraq. So the Kurdish populations, at the hands of these governments who are in cooperation with the U.S., who use U.S. funding, U.S. military equipment, and then somehow appearing on the surface as if there's some contradiction here between the U.S. and Turkey. At the moment, as you said in the beginning, Turkey, Israel, and the U.S. collectively are trying to carve out this land, and Kurds are under threat. And also, I have to say, one important thing is, even during Assad regime, Turkey was preventing the Kurds from sitting at the negotiating table to determine the future of a democratic Syria. And Turkey is doing that right now. While HDS have been giving some messages that Kurds could be included in this process, that is after that the Turkish foreign minister made several visits, signaled that, hey, we've been supporting HDS for the past 11 years. And so Turkey is trying very hard to prevent Kurds from sitting at the negotiating table. And that's a very big loss for the region in general.
And, of course, we'll continue to cover this. Özlem Gunnar, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Associate Professor at Department of Sociology and Anthropology at College of Staten Island and also at the CUNY Graduate Center here in Manhattan. Happy birthday to Narmeen Maria. Tune in tomorrow to our tribute to the blacklisted lyricist Yip Harburg, the man who put the rainbow in The Wizard of Oz, his song sung by millions around the world. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Ooh, la, 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 la. Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest Open Mic schedule.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly,
merry,
happy,
joyful,
fantastic,
exciting,
fancy,
magnificent,
remarkable,
special,
white,
sparkling,
terrific,
stunning,
festive,
and
wonderful holiday season.